and you don't have air conditioning. So I guess what, is that a plexi bubble? How's the comfort in there?
You know, it's, I think it's an honor to be driving the vehicle is the right way to look at it. Cause there's not much in the way of comfort.
Hello and welcome to the Autonicast. I'm Ed Niedermeyer. I'm the author of Ludicrous, the Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors.
And I'm Kirsten Korosek, transportation editor at TechCrunch.
And I'm Alex Roy, the founder of the Human Driving Association. And I never talk about this on the show. I have set, I think, 8 or 9 cannonball driving records, but I've never set one in the category we're going to discuss today with our guest, William Jones, the co-founder of the Cannonball Sun Endurance Driving Team, straight out of University of Michigan, which I hear is the New York Yankees of solar car development. Welcome, William Jones.
Thanks. Yeah. Pumped to be here.
Would anyone else like to start or can I just dive right in?
Go for it, Alex. Get us okay. Started.
So in the history of cannonball records, people have, I'm not aware that it's a horseback cannonball record, but there, you know, the gas cannonball records began about 100-some-odd years ago with Irwin Cannonball Baker. And then there were electric records began to be set around the beginning of this century. I said 3 of them, but those records have been broken. And there is a fetish among cannonball drivers to try to subdivide records into more peculiar things. So when I did it in a Morgan three-wheeler, I declared the three-wheeled cannonball record, the open wheel record, and the convertible record. But I think the holy grail of cannonball records is a record that is set using cutting-edge technology that requires real engineering knowledge. And that is why we have William Jones here. William, tell us a little bit about you, your co-drivers, and your team, and what inspired you to go set the solar-powered vehicle cannonball record?
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of a long story, actually, but in high school, me and Kyle Samluck, who was one of the other guys who we did the record with, we founded this high school solar car team, and it sounds crazy, but high schools from around the country design and build, you know, real life solar cars that actual students drive in. And there's this competition. It's at the Texas Motor Speedway in Dallas, Texas. And you drive around for 4 days and you try and do most laps possible. You can drive up to 6 hours a day. There's, you know, 6 available hours if your car is reliable. And so, you know, I kind of conned my buddy Kyle into this and I was like, hey, like, let's do this thing. And he was like, okay, I guess we don't really know what we're doing. But so we sort of figured it out. We designed and we built this car, and it wasn't a great car by any means, but it did pretty well. It was reliable, was its best feature. And so we ended up getting 2nd place in the country at this high school solar car challenge. And so we kind of bit the solar car bug. And then from there, we kind of went our different ways. And Kyle went up to Michigan Tech, where he just graduated. And I went to University of Michigan. And for those who don't know, they're about 9 hours apart, just about as far as apart you can be and still both be in the state of Michigan. But he came down for a fall break or something, and we kind of got to talking. And this was during COVID. And we were like, man, you know, we had a lot of fun building that car. We're kind of sticking around at college right now, drinking beer and not going to class or going to class online. And so we were like, you know, let's build a car and let's do the cannonball run. We're, you know, car guys who've been watching the news and, you know, kind of everyone had been taking their stab at a cannonball run with no one on the roads. And we were like, yeah, you know, like, let's go for it. And so this was in November, and we said, all right, we're going to do it next summer, which, you know, for the uninformed, to go from literally nothing, no shop, not so many tools, to like a running driving car in approximately 8 months, who wanted to leave in late June, was sort of like bonkers. But we did it. And along the way, we recruited Danny, who ended up being another one of the guys on this 2024 run.
That's Danny Ezzo.
That's Danny Ezzo. That's right. Yeah. And so We took the car. We had a connection with the state police, and they have a track in Lansing where we're from. So we took this first car out to the track, and we're all pumped. And we do like three laps and there's something wrong with the steering. We fiddle around and then it's kind of a windy day and Kyle was behind the wheel and he bakes a corner a little too fast and we just about roll the damn thing. And this is the first day I ever met Danny, and Kyle and Danny go to school and actually ran cross country and track together at Michigan Tech. And so somehow not only did he like not, you know, I don't know, call us crazy. He's like, yeah, I want in, like I'm in. So we made some changes, increased the stability a little bit, or told ourselves. And so we tried to do this first Cannonball in 2021 with this first car, and it was kind of a nightmare. Did not go very well. The car had some issues. It was definitely a half-baked product. But at the conclusion of that, we all sort of agreed.
Wait, hold on. Hang on 1 second. Can you describe the car for us? Because I think a lot of people just think it's a car with solar panels on the roof.
Okay. Yeah.
Explain what the car is, what it looks like, and talk to us about that.
Sure. So this, the first 2021 car, it was an aluminum tub, sort of like an old Ford GT, I guess. Not quite on that level of engineering, if I'm going to be honest. It looked, my dad called it like the silver shoebox, because the chassis just, you know, looked like a box. But it was, you know, approximately 20 feet long, about 6 feet wide. It had a little over 2,200 watts of residential solar array, three-wheel vehicle, so two wheels in the front, one wheel in the back. That one was like a open cockpit. We were supposed to have like a bubble canopy, but it sort of fell through and like it was what it was. We just moved on. We didn't have enough time or know-how or money to solve that problem. Single rear motor. It was a hub motor, so sort of like the thing you'd see in maybe like an electric motorcycle. And this one actually used trailer rims in the front. You know, got to get creative. Got to get scrappy. We didn't have, you know, any money to our names. Custom battery. You know, I actually welded it like in my the house that I'm living in at college. My roommates were like, you're gonna fucking burn down the house. And I was like, yeah, I probably know what I'm doing. I don't think I really knew what I was doing, but it worked out. And it had a plastic aero body, so it's like this corrugated plastic effectively. And for the first one, we actually just like sort of measured it out and cut it up with box cutters, and we found a sign shop to put some artwork on it. So, you know, you talk about cars and sometimes you're like, a car's like a 10 footer from 10 feet away. It looks pretty good. I think that car was like a 50 footer from 50 feet away. It looked pretty good. So that was sort of the first time we tried it. And it was just crazy. Like you're taking this like spaceship through the Lincoln Tunnel and you're like, if this thing breaks down, like we are so fucked.
So hold on a second.
Yeah,
let me just get
I
this
have
straight.
A question about that. So
go ahead.
What are the rules around like FMVSS? Were you not just, I mean, forget about like potentially breaking down Lincoln Tunnel. Like, was it legally drivable on the road? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we have a VIN number. It's insured with Progressive. So there's a pretty good process in the state of Michigan. We had I called up the local, just like I'm from Meridian Township. The Meridian Township police officer showed up and I printed off a form from like the Secretary of State and he checks the boxes. And one of them is like an exhaust. And he's like, well, you don't have an exhaust. I'm like, it's electric. He's like, okay, I guess I could check this off. And then you take your paperwork to the Secretary of State and, you know, they look at it and call their manager in and then they scratch their heads and then they're like, okay, well, I guess we just, you know, do what the form says. And then you wait a month in the mail and some other, you know, bureaucrat from the Michigan state government comes out and gives you a VIN sticker and then you're good to go.
Amazing.
And so let me get this straight. So what do you tell your insurance company? Like, how do you do it over the phone? Okay, over the phone. So I mean, tell them?
It's probably similar, right? To like building a kit car, a Shelby Cobra kit car or something like that. These aren't manufactured by an OEM. You build it yourself and then you have to register for the road, right? I imagine it's a similar set of rules, right?
I think so. I think for like a totally home built vehicle, it's a little different. But yeah, I, you know, just called up like the local progressive agent and I said, it's registered as a motorcycle. So we all had to get our motorcycle endorsement. I said, I have a motorcycle I want to register. And they're like, okay, well, you know, I need a make and model. And, you know, it's whatever the state of Michigan assigns. And they're kind of scratching their heads and go, well, do you have a VIN? You give them a VIN and they go, okay, I think I see it here. And then, you know, it's like, it's only PLPD. So, you know, obviously, if you get into an accident, they're not going to, you know, pay to fix it. But if you hit someone or hit something, then, you know, the insurance will pay out on the other person. Yeah, I don't know. I imagine if they saw it, they would probably flip shit. But
hey, just so you know, we're going to have to bleep out these curse words. But
no, we're not. This is not a family show.
It's an adult show. It's
not a family show.
So you can get it registered to get on the road, but like that doesn't mean it's easy or like fun to drive, right? Like I imagine. I'm like a Shelby Cobra kit car, right? At least that, you know, you're keeping up with traffic, you're merging onto interstates. Tell us a little bit about the performance specs that you're dealing with on this, because that's really, right? Like that's what makes it interesting to drive a vehicle like this on public roads.
So, you know, the first car, I guess we can go through both cars, but that first car in 2021, without a driver, it weighed, you know, around 800 pounds. The motor peak, could do maybe 10 horsepower for like 30 seconds and then more like 5 to 6 horsepower sustained for like to say climb a mountain. The first car effectively had no suspension. So any potholes, any bumps are pretty painful. It doesn't stop particularly well. The first car, it did have disc brakes on all wheels, but the fronts we never quite set up to work very well. So, you know, it's definitely an exercise in patience. And the other thing is, you know, you're not driving too fast because it's all about efficiency and doing the most miles per day. And, you know, the technology is what it is. So, you know, that first car, we were probably cruising around 30, 35. And the second car, we were a little bit faster, 35, 40 miles an hour, sustained speeds. So you're not driving very fast.
Were you sticking then to... You weren't going on like major interstates then, right? Were you trying to stick to like, okay.
It's all, like 2-lane back road. You know, the best scenario though is when there is 2 lanes in either direction, because then it makes the passing a lot safer because, you know, I'd say 90% of the people are fine and, you know, they wait until a safe spot, but you do get some, you know, jerks, especially in those big pickup trucks, and they try and pass and there's not enough room and it can get a little dicey, who goes where specifically, you know, they're trying to pass you and there's oncoming traffic. It's a little tight.
So how's the visibility in, for the driver of the vehicle?
You know, you technically did need a mirror, but we thought that the mirror wasn't very aerodynamic. So you can't really see behind you. The forward visibility is pretty good. Side to side is pretty good. But since that like solar array is quite long, you know, imagine a regular car, you're pretty far forward in the vehicle. But you know, for our vehicles, we have a decent sized solar array in front of you. So sort of that like downward visibility, especially when cresting a hill, it's pretty hard to see. It's pretty hard to see the road, especially. So the other guy who we brought along for this year's adventure, Brett Caesar, he was a shorter guy, and so he really struggled to see out of the vehicle.
Let me just so we're clear for the audience, the vehicle looks like an enormous playing card laying flat, and there is a little bubble in the center of it, out of which or inside which the driver's head sits. And you don't have air conditioning. So I guess what, is that a plexi bubble? How's the comfort in there?
You know, it's, I think it's an honor to be driving the vehicle is the right way to look at it. Cause there's not much in the way of comfort. You know, there's about 1 inch of foam. We don't want to put in too much foam cause that's heavy, you know, slows the vehicle down. We did put in some more vents. That was nice just to get a little bit of airflow. When we were in the Mojave Desert, though, getting to LA, and it was like 115 degrees out, it turns out that venting like 115 degree air is not, you know, particularly pleasant.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I guess lesson learned on that one.
Well, so this just one person could fit in this vehicle. Am I clear about that?
Yeah, that's right. So when we were driving down the road, we had a truck and trailer behind. And so that included, you know, all of our spare parts. If we needed it every night, we'd put the car in the trailer just to keep it safe. So no one would, you know, solar arrays are relatively fragile. And the whole car is relatively fragile. Didn't want anyone, you know, sitting on it or whatever that may be. And, you know, we had lots of spare parts, spare wheels, spare motors, lots of spare tires. And then we're constantly trading. So, you know, if the weather is good, you might be in the car for, say, somewhere between an hour and a half and 2.5 hours. But when we were in the desert and, you know, it was really quite hot, we were trading every 35, 40 minutes, because it was really stinking hot. And, you know, that kind of glass bubble is almost like a greenhouse, and the solar array, you know, is all black. So they get pretty stinking hot.
So let me understand. So the support vehicle in which everything and the trailer, are they following or are they leading?
They're following. Yeah. And so we had, like, you know, some warning lights and a sign just kind of giving folks a heads up. Hey, there's a solar car ahead. You know, please be patient. I think that helped, actually, because, you know, we did some driving before we had those, and there was definitely some confusion. And, you know, especially if someone's passing, they really got to know that there's another vehicle ahead. So you're not just passing a truck and trailer, but you're also passing another vehicle that's, you know, whatever, 50 feet in front of the truck and trailer.
All right. So I can ask, I got a thousand questions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can we just jump in on this? Because, so, you know, I know, like, solar racing has been around since like the 80s, basically. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I want to, like, get into this a little bit more of the history, but I'm just curious at this juncture, what, you know, you mentioned the other races that are, like, on courses, and it's about, you know, as many laps. I do know, like, in Australia, there's some that are, like, on public roads, but it's, like, the absolute middle of nowhere, which I know obviously a lot of this was as well for you. I'm just wondering how much solar racing actually happens on public roads. Was there sort of, like, a best practices that you were able to, like, take from other races that are done this way? Or, like, were you sort of having to make some of this up as you go along?
No, definitely taking from others. And so I actually am a part, or was a part, of the University of Michigan solar car team. And so I went to Australia with the Michigan team in 2023. And yeah, like you're saying, you're on public roads, but it's desolate out there. And, you know, same way like the Mojave was, or some areas in New Mexico where there's just nothing, nobody. You know, you can drive for an hour and not see a single other vehicle. And then there's also an American race, the American Solar Challenge, that takes place every other year. It took place this summer, actually, and that was from approximately Tennessee to Wyoming. So there's definitely a precedent for having sort of these funny looking experiments on the road.
And let me just understand this. So in the traditional internal combustion cannonball, you want to plan to depart New York City on generally a Friday evening, because you want to time your arrival in LA. You know, middle of the night on, you know, call it, you know, somewhere in 25 to 30 hours later. And you want to maximize your night driving time. In an electric cannonball, you do the same thing, but you need to time for your stops because you have to charge chargers that are available. But it sounds to me like this is all the inverse of that. You can only drive in the daytime. And then you stop at night.
Yeah.
How did you plan that? Walk us through the scheduling and the timing of your departure and arrival plan.
Sure. So leaving New York, you know, we're a little stressed about the traffic and, you know, not only maneuvering the solar car, but keeping the truck and trailer behind the solar car and, like, sort of the whole convoy together is kind of a tricky thing. So we decided we'd leave at approximately 4:30 from New York. And trying to
4:30 a.m.
A.m. Yeah, that's right. Dodge the worst of the traffic. And so I guess this kind of brings in the question. The solar car does have a battery. It's a very small battery, about 3 kilowatt hours. which, you know, say that's like 3% of that Model S you have, Alex. so it doesn't give you a ton of range, but about 100 miles with no sun and, say, cruising at 35 miles an hour. So we left at about 4:30 and we drove approximately 40 miles out of the city. And then we paused. And so we can also tilt the solar array, and not while we're driving, but when we're stopped, we'll point the solar array at the sun. And, you know, like the more perpendicular the array is to the sun, the more energy you collect. So especially like in the early morning and late evening, when the sun's not directly overhead, it's definitely advantageous to be paused and pointing as opposed to driving, because you're going to collect more energy. So sort of like what we did is, you know, we left at 4:30, and the thing that I think makes it fun or true adventure is you don't really know where you're going to end in the night. You know, you're going to have breakdowns. There's going to be varying weather. So you can kind of take a pretty good guess, but you never really know until it's kind of that, you know, final 1 to 2 hours of when you want to be driving. And you also, you know, you have to have enough solar energy to keep the vehicle on the road. So we left at 4:30 and we sort of cruised, and that was a pretty long day for us. The other thing is you can kind of get stuck where, you know, maybe you could camp in some farmer's field, but you really rather be in a hotel. So you kind of have to figure it out and say, well, you know, we could go further and pause in a hotel, or we kind of have to stop here because there's not another hotel along the way for another 50, 60, 100 miles. Tried to, you know, sleep as much as possible. And we actually did sleep every night in a hotel, which we weren't planning on. We were prepared to camp and cook on the side of the road. And that's sort of, you know, what's done in Australia for those like World Solar Challenge. But it's a little different in Australia when there's, you know, literally nothing, or in the United States, you know, there's a lot more people and towns and that kind of thing. And they might not take very kindly to you just squatting on their land.
And so when you were stopped at these hotels, did you have to worry about security for the vehicle, or it just went in the trailer and you were like anyone else with a trailer moving a vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were some sketchy hotels and some sketchy people. We definitely, you know, we weren't staying at the Ritz-Carlton or the Marriott every night, you know, there's, but we were a little worried about that. And, you know, we had locks and everything on the trailer, and we'd try and park the trailer and get a room where we could, you know, see the trailer and, you know, hopefully, I mean, we slept pretty good. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if we would have heard someone. And, you know, so really you're kind of, you have to like do whatever the sun does. So, you know, if you have a full day of sunshine, you're up before the sun rises so you can get the, you know, get the car out, kind of do your pre-drive checks, make sure everything's good. And then, you know, either you point this, the car at the sun, or you start driving, and then you're, you know, kind of babysitting the car until the sun sets. And then if you need to do any repairs or modifications, you know, you're probably doing that after the sun sets. So it makes for some pretty long days.
So I have a question kind of about the technology a little bit, and just sort of solar cars in general. And this is for folks who have not followed, like myself, who have not really followed solar racing particularly. You know, solar vehicles, we described it sort of earlier, they're going to be very minimalist, very low, very flat, very aerodynamic. Obviously you want surface area for your solar, you want minimal aerodynamics. But you describe, I mean, a very, very small battery. And it's interesting because, you know, you see EVs that are like selling to people, and you have this sort of problem where it's like they're almost like addicted to like too big of batteries, and they're so heavy. And it's sort of this interesting engineering challenge of like, how do we get away from that problem? Whereas with solar, you have a lot of pressures. So I'm just kind of curious, like what's preventing bigger batteries in solar cars, right? Like what's preventing you from putting a bigger battery in, sort of scaling up the concept and doing that? What keeps these vehicles so minimal, just kind of like they were in 1985 and stuff when this all first started?
Yeah, so it's definitely a question of like energy in and energy out. And those are kind of the most important, you know, sort of performance parameters, I guess. And so, you know, the thing is there's the sun that, you know, there's a lot of energy, but on a little, you know, small solar array, you're not generating that much energy. And, you know, for us, say best case scenario in full sun, we'd be generating, or, you know, collecting from the solar array about as much as a microwave running on full power. So it's just not a ton of power, you know, and you think like, you know, a regular EV, say maybe 300 watt hours per mile is a, you know, kind of typical fuel economy. So we were averaging about 30 watt hours per mile. So we're using, you know, 10% of the energy. And that's kind of the reason why maybe you don't necessarily see solar panels on the Teslas or the EVs of today. And, you know, kind of the battery question is interesting because, you know, I don't think it's been done yet. I don't think you can build a big enough battery to drive from New York to Los Angeles, or the battery would be so huge, you know, the vehicle would have to just be absolutely massive to be able to contain something that big. So, you know, for us, it's definitely an optimization problem. And we sort of elected to go with a generally smaller battery because we knew we were going to have to carry that mass all the way from New York to Los Angeles and haul it up, you know, the Appalachian Mountains, the Rocky Mountains, the Sierra Nevada. There's a lot of mountains between New York City and Los Angeles. It's pretty flat. Yeah.
On the Cannonball Sun website, where you describe the challenge, I think it's interesting. One of the rules is no law breaking, which I don't think is one of the rules of the traditional Cannonball Sun or the traditional Cannonball Run. But what I'm curious about is you say, it says on the rules, it says driving during the night, exotic battery chemistries and large solar panel arrays are not only allowed, but encouraged. And so to kind of follow up on what I was just asking, one potential strategy connecting the dots here is maybe a bigger vehicle, a bigger battery, you charge during the day and drive at night. Why isn't that strategy viable? Or why did you not try and take that strategy?
So I think for us, you know, there ended up being five of us who made the trip. My dad also tagged along as the responsible adult or trailer driver or whatever you want to describe it.
What a sport.
That was pretty fun. But you know what, there only being five of us, you kind of have to acknowledge like the human element, and like there just wasn't enough of us. Like I definitely think that would be like a viable strategy. But like you need more people, and there's definitely more risk associated. You know, it's hard to see at night is I think the big thing. And like, you know, potholes or animals or other vehicles, I think the potential for incidents is much higher driving at night. And you know, the only night driving we did was leaving New York City, and you know, the sun started to come up pretty soon once we left New York, and it's, you know, obviously very well lit with streetlights and that kind of thing in that, you know, general area. So that's why we didn't do it. I think it would be quite exciting, you know, if someone else kind of took this idea and ran with it and attempted something like that. I would be excited about that. But for us, you know, I think we sort of still built more of what I would describe as like a standard solar car and didn't necessarily try and do anything crazy. And that was sort of our guiding philosophy too, was we didn't necessarily want to build the lightest car or the most aerodynamic car, or have the best battery or the best solar array. We just wanted to build a car that could kind of complete this adventure. And so I think that sort of meant, you know, wherever we could, trying to buy down risk and, you know, ensure reliability. And if we couldn't ensure reliability, at least ensure we had enough of the parts that, you know, if something went wrong, we could replace them.
I love it. It's such a Michigan auto industry, right? Like you got to do it. You're doing something new for the first time. Like it's not all about being at the cutting edge or the most novel approach. It's just like, yeah, like will this thing actually do it? I love it.
Kirsten?
Okay. Yes. So I want to go back to your sort of origin story and you're describing like the beginning of it. And I'm wondering, you obviously were familiar and had participated in the solar races, but specifically what had you land on the idea of Cannonball, like a Cannonball Run? Was it that you had known about this, like the more traditional Cannonball runs? You have Alex's book on your bedside table. Like what exactly is... How did you get onto that specific idea?
You know, I think at least for me, I just kind of saw, you know, stories and, you know, there's VinWiki and, you know, YouTube videos and that kind of thing. And, you know, you just think, oh, this seems like a, you know, a cool thing to do and like sort of a epic adventure. I think also, you know, I guess kind of thinking like, you know, if you could build a solar car that could drive from New York to Los Angeles, then like, you know, you'd have built like a pretty good car. And so I think that's kind of, you know, why we landed on that and why we stuck with it.
Did you reach out to anyone who had actually broken previous records?
No, not really. You know, I think for us, maybe like the cannonball part wasn't as like important. It's more about the adventure, if that makes sense. And it's sort of nice that there's already this like pre-existing sort of precedent for driving a car from New York to Los Angeles. And so, you know, we kind of jumped on that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
What was the prior solar time cross country before you went?
So no one had ever done the, well, I guess someone had, they took a Model X, I believe, and I don't have the time off the top of my head, but they put solar panels in the trunk of their car and they, you know, say drive the range of the vehicle and they'd pause and like take the solar panels out for 3 days and charge their vehicle back up. And so, you know, that's the only one who's actually done the New York to Los Angeles. And there's another like German group that did it around the world. And they also drove across the country. But I guess to us, we felt, you know, we're really like the first team to do it in a true solar car from Red Ball to Portofino.
And what was the actual time? I don't think you've actually said what the total time was.
Yeah, so it ended up being 13 days, 15 hours, and 19 minutes. So it's, you know, a little ways off the record. Definitely, I think, a lot more painful, physically grueling, mentally, emotionally. But, you know, I think we also kind of had the opportunity to see, you know, all of the United States, and we weren't necessarily on like a tourist trip, but you know, it's you're going through all these small towns, and you know, everywhere we stopped, any you know time we had to gas up our truck or the hotel, people would always come out and talk to us, and you know, like what the hell is this thing?
Well, actually, that time is actually very impressive, because if you go back about 110 years, I think Irwin Baker's original time in a internal combustion car with no interstate highway system, just back roads, was 271 hours, which is about, you know, 11 days. So, I mean, you're actually very much, you know, making history here. I mean,
that's actually a cool like goal, right? Is could you do it in Irwin Baker's time? You're only a couple of, well,
yeah,
days,
yeah,
a couple
yeah,
days yeah. off. No, that, yeah. A couple of days pretty, off pretty your time, close. And you're there.
So, what was the reliability of the vehicle? I mean, how many things did you have to fix or replace on the way?
You know, I'd say pretty much every day there was something a little funny with the vehicle. Sort of the biggest weak point, and unfortunately, we didn't really figure out that this was going to be a weak point until we actually began, and we had about, you know, 800 miles of testing on roads and tracks in Michigan before we left for New York City, was we ended up using effectively e-bike motors. And, you know, these are kind of like hot rod e-bike motors, kind of like the thing you put in from a kit. And so they really just weren't designed for the loads and stresses that we were putting on them, and the speeds as well. So we broke, I want to say, 13 spokes all in. And the vehicle was three-wheel drive. So, you know, it had three wheels, and we had one motor in each wheel. And, you know, that helped with like the heat dissipation. You think like the surface area, you know, you have approximately three times the surface area because you have three motors. And so we started with five fully functional motors leaving New York City, and we finished with 2.5 functional motors entering LA. And we needed to kind of those like San Gabriel Mountains and like the Los Angeles National Forest. I don't, if anyone's listening, if you've ever been there, it's extraordinarily like mountainous and hilly. And, you know, we struggled. Those were some of the steepest hills we encountered the entire duration of the drive. So we needed all three of those motors. And that was definitely the weak spot. And it was sort of a bummer, I think, because, you know, if we had known that ahead of time, there's definitely more we could have done in terms of having more spares or trying to strengthen things up. But, you know, it all ended okay.
So this raises the question, what was your budget? I mean, can you share what your budget for this was? Yeah.
So, you know, I think all in total cash spend on the car, and you know, not including the trip, was somewhere between $12,000 and $14,000. So it was not a, you know, ridiculous amount of money by any means. And we did get a couple of things sponsored. There's a company who sponsored the solar array, which was pretty cool, called High Tech Solar in Michigan City, Indiana. But, you know, it was pretty much just funded between us and kind of that core group of me, Kyle, and Danny are sort of the three ones who really, you know, were the champions of the project and kind of brought it to completion.
And did you have any police interactions once you were in motion?
We did. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
everyone breaks the law like you, Alex.
In 2021, we actually got like pulled over before entering the Lincoln Tunnel. And they, you know, checked out our paperwork, but this time in, this year we cruised right through the Lincoln Tunnel and, no issues there. But we were in Pennsylvania and we were just pausing for a minute, to swap drivers, and a, state trooper pulls over and he said, "Hey, you know, we heard someone called in that there was a downed airplane. So I think it's you guys." And, you know, he just thought it was cool and took some pictures and looked at our paperwork and was like, "All right, you know, be safe. I guess you guys are good to go." I think we only got really two interactions with the police. And the second time was a little more funny. We were going through a downtown in Ohio. You know, we kind of knew in Ohio, like, we got to be on our A game. You know, Ohio is notorious for the cops being sort of jerks. And so we were going through a downtown, you know, the speed limit was 25 or 35. We were going the speed limit when all of a sudden, you know, we get pulled over. And, you know, the cop is like, "What is this thing?" And then we're explaining it's a solar car. And so she was like, "Well, I couldn't see your license plate." And we're like, "Okay." And if you look at pictures of the car, the license plate, you know, is exactly where you expect it. There's even a light on it, you know, for legal compliance. It's right in the center of the vehicle. And then she was like, "Well, you guys really got to pick it up through town." And we were like, "Well, we were going the speed limit." She's like, "Yeah, but can you guys just pick it up a little bit when you're leaving?" And we were like, "We can do that." So, you know, we left town and I think maybe we were going 2 miles an hour over the speed limit, and we were glad to get out of there. So it was only two times we got pulled over. You know, we probably saw another, I don't know, two dozen police officers, and, you know, we'd always wave and try and be friendly. And it, you know, it wasn't a big deal to get pulled over, but it was sort of inconvenient. It slowed us down. You know, it generally wasn't timed right.
Listen, if I'm a cop and I see, you know, a bunch of nice, you know, engineers, college engineer kids, you know, with a solar car project, that's one thing. If I see Alex Roy with the M5 full of like bizarre, you know, like 90s technology, I'm having a slightly different response to that scenario.
Our most famous pullover while on an actual cannonball attempt was in the middle of Oklahoma City. And, you know, we're all disguised as storm chasers in the middle of tornado season. And the cop runs up, we're broken down, and the cop comes to my window and he looks inside and sees all the equipment, and we're all wearing storm chaser jackets and gear. And he says, "What agency are you with?" And I'm so terrified. I just say, "William Morris." and he's like, "I never heard of them," and let us go. So what about weather? Did you ever encounter rain or wind, which have affected you?
Yeah. So quite a bit of rain. I want to say, my memory is correct, the third day we were only able to do like 100 miles because it was basically just raining on and off the entire day. And we could drive in the rain. The vehicle wasn't exactly waterproofed, but it, you know, it was set up in such a way that we felt confident enough driving in a light rain. Definitely from like a safety perspective, it could be a little sketchy because, you know, the tires we were using, we ran at 110 PSI and basically have no tread. So that could be a little spooky. And so we had one day that sort of got totally rained out in Ohio, I guess between West Virginia and Ohio. And then when we got to the Rocky Mountains, it's monsoon season in Arizona and New Mexico. So every day around 5 o'clock, you know, kind of a big storm would roll in. It would start to rain and thunder, and that was okay. You know, and the nice thing about the rain was, as long as it was sunny, especially in the West, in the Rockies, you know, if it was sunny all day and then it was rainy at the end of the day, it kind of just meant, okay, we could put the car away and like take a break and go to bed early. So it wasn't totally unwelcome. It was definitely sort of frustrating and, you know, stressful to deal with too, as you're trying to sort of dodge these clouds and stay ahead of it. Wind was definitely an issue, especially Missouri, Kansas, where it's just wide open, flat. You know, you figure sort of from like a side area view, like if you look at our vehicle from the side, it's not that much smaller than like a Miata or a something like that. But you figure weight wise. So the 2024 vehicle Sunstrider is what we called it. Sunstrider without a driver weighed about 600 pounds. So you know, it's pretty light, you know, compared to a Miata or whatever, maybe 20%, but the, you know, sort of side area is the same. So any wind, it was definitely pretty sensitive and, you know, we'd have to slow it down, at times just because
it's also flat. So it has the potential of becoming an airfoil.
In the wrong circumstances.
Yeah. It's, you don't want that.
Become especially an actual down airplane.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your total time again?
13 days, 15 hours, and 19 minutes.
Okay, so knowing what you know now, if you were to go again next week, how much time could you shave off of that time?
So I think with the same car, I don't know how much faster we could really be, maybe a day faster. Like I think we got generally pretty lucky with the weather. You know, we had a really good team. We ran a pretty clean, you know, we didn't make a lot of mistakes, I would say. Now, if we were to build a new car, I definitely think, you know, even for the same amount of money, sub 10 days is definitely possible. I think the goal would probably be, if we were to go at it again, you know, a little older, a little wiser, a little more money, maybe to try and do it in a week. And that would be, you know, I think that would be quite impressive.
That actually leads me to my last question. I don't know if anyone else has any others, but what are you doing from here? Are you going to try to do this again, or have you moved on to other projects?
So I think we're all kind of getting, I actually have 1 year left at the University of Michigan. Danny has 1 year left at Michigan Tech, and Brett and Kyle are graduated. So, you know, I think we're all kind of going to move on a little bit and get jobs, but we're definitely down for another adventure, I think. You know, my sister at the start was like, oh, you guys are going to hate each other by the end. I was like, I don't think so. You know, I think we definitely sort of became, you know, better friends. And that was one special thing about it, too, I think, for everyone to be able to commit that time and for my dad to tag along, too. You know, he's kind of part of the crew, too. We taught him some new phrases and kind of got him joking along with us.
So your website says 3,100 miles. So in my experience, optimizing Cannonball routing on our navigation apps, the plots always show that the shortest route New York to LA is 2,794 miles is what I had. And then when we got there, it ended up being 2,811 miles. So the delta to 3,100, is that because of the back roads?
Yeah, because of the back roads. You definitely pay a pretty good price when you get to the Rocky Mountains. And we didn't take the most optimal route either. We sort of took the most sun optimal route and we avoided Colorado, you know, going more south through. We went through Kansas and the panhandle of Oklahoma and Texas and then into New Mexico. So sort of the combination of the back roads and maybe not taking the most direct route adds up to be a little more miles. And I think, you know, if we were to do it again, we'd probably try and build a vehicle that could go on the, you know, maintain interstate speeds or close enough, at least for several hundred mile stretches. So when we got to sort of those situations where we really had to go out of our way to avoid the interstate, we could just jump on the interstate and, you know, make a whatever 50 to 100 mile an hour trip to sort of cut that distance down. And also the nice thing about the interstate is, you know, generally you don't see much more than a 6 or 7% grade, but on some of these back roads, you know, we definitely saw well over that, you know, maybe even a 10 or 11% grade, which, you know, is really steep.
All right. So people often ask how much faster one could drive cross country for the full on Cannonball record in an internal combustion car. The current record is like 25 hours and change. And that was set during the COVID lockdowns when roads were fairly empty. And my answer beyond that is that Internal combustion engines, the current like state of the art, there's not much time to be shaved off the internal combustion record anymore, other than eliminating all stops. So if you carry enough fuel on board, you could get cross country in a gas car, no stops. At which point, the limiting factor for your time is tire technology and road surface. Those are things that are real. And then beyond that, traffic, you know, traffic, weather, police. But if you remove those elements, technologically, it's road surface and tire tech limits the gas time. In an electric car, the times are limited by electric charging rate and onboard battery capacity. And so the electric times have improved dramatically in recent years. And there is a lot more room to improve. The current electric Cannonball record is 42 hours in the Tesla Model S. And reliance on the reliability of the Tesla and ubiquity of Tesla chargers. And I believe that at the current rate of improvement, electric times will cross and surpass internal combustion times within 10 years. I think it's entirely possible. Because electric charging times currently are in the, I think it's in the 10, 12 hour range, I think, cross country. And so if that could get down, once it gets down to 30 minutes, which is one stop across country is a 30 minute stop, then I think that it'll surpass it. So the question is, solar times cross country, you're at the beginning of the curve. You're the first guy to set this record. What technological improvements and on what timeline do you expect to see these improvements that will start pulling your time down dramatically from 7 to 13 days, down to 3 days, 2 days, and eventually 1 day, and the timeline for them?
Sure. Okay, that's a pretty loaded question.
No one better to ask than you.
So I think, you know, a lot of the technology is already there. And like, if I were to guess, you know, the cars that say do the World Solar Challenge can cost upwards of $1 million. You know, in terms of by the time you pay for all the prepreg carbon fiber and tooling and machining and space grade solar cells and that sort of thing. So, you know, I think to start to answer that question, you know, say if you had an unlimited budget and you went at this record, you know, if I had to guess, I would say somewhere between 4 and 5 days was very possible. And that would probably, you know, assume you would be driving a good portion of the day and the night, and you know, have to have a really good team and, you know, some really good engineering, and that, you know, that'd be quite exciting, I think. You know, so say if you did it in 4 days, call it 100 hours, 3,000 miles for easy math, like 30 miles an hour, you know, and that might mean you don't, you know, like a regular Cannonball, you don't stop much at all. So maybe an actual driving speed of 40 miles an hour with various stops and repairs and recoveries. But you know, the solar technology is sort of how like computers were, say, I don't know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago. Like, it's just going to get better and better. And, you know, I think a lot of the focus right now is on the cost reduction. And you can see, you know, the cost per kilowatt of solar array of just the panels, especially, is just, you know, nosedive in recent years. And a lot of that's from, you know, sort of the Chinese manufacturing, but sort of everywhere, it's just getting better and better. And, you know, I think once that price sort of becomes at a certain point, the next game is going to become efficiency and packing in as much energy per acre of solar array or whatever that might be. And, you know, it's already, I guess, quite efficient. You know, the best silicon solar cells, which is what you see on rooftops, are about 25% efficient. But, you know, you're seeing in labs and this kind of thing that maybe upwards of 35 or 40% with various technologies is possible. And that's, you know, what the best space grade solar cells that are like are on the ISS would be, 40% efficient. And it's still not very good. You know, there's a lot of room to grow in terms of making those solar cells more efficient. And it's the same thing with the batteries. And sort of the key number there is watt hours per kilogram. You know, you figure if you have a solar car or an electric car, and it has a given mass of, say, you know, say you have a 500 kilogram battery pack in an electric car, you know, the energy density today is somewhere around in those production packs is like 200 watt hours per kilogram for, say, like cylindrical cells that a Tesla might have, like the 4680s or 18650s, whatever those cells are. And that number is just going to get better and better. You know, there's some companies that have cells that are over 400 watt hours per kilogram. So you can imagine for the same given pack, which has the same, you know, mass, you can have twice the capacity. And so I expect that number to continue to inch up. And those are sort of the two big levers. So I don't know, you know, I'd have to sit down and think about it, like how many years, but I'd imagine, say, in somewhere between 15 to 20 years, the technology would be there to do a cannonball run in, say, 50 hours for solar power. And you have to get lucky on the weather. But will there be folks to do it? I don't know. You know, like,
oh, I guarantee there will be.
Yeah, maybe we'll be one of them. You know, I think today that 100 hours is definitely very possible if you had the right team and the, you know, the right support. So yeah, you know, if anyone out there is listening and wants to support a 100-hour solar car, you know, give us a call. We can make your dreams come true, I think.
So that actually is perfect for my last question, which is sort of, so I mean, in solar racing, I feel like for a lot of even American sort of car guys and stuff, people aren't really that aware of it necessarily, but like that was, you know, J.B. Straubel, it was like really like the electrical engineering genius behind you know what Tesla did, you know, got to start there and gives a lot of credit to his experience in solar racing for that. I'm curious, like, and it also strikes me that maybe there's a little bit, certainly the, what you're doing, right? Not competing with a big college team at one of the world, you know, sort of established races, but doing your own thing. That gives you an opportunity to kind of almost do your own startup experience while doing a really interesting engineering project. What is your pitch to people for why they should do solar racing and not, you know, I don't know, Formula SAE, or there's lots of kind of engineering projects that kids in college can do. Why solar racing? What is it for you that makes it valuable?
Yeah, I think that's easy. And for me, it's all about the adventure. You know, like the Formula SAE, where they, you know, build sort of the autocross style F1 looking, but, you know, they complete an autocross course effectively, or Baja, where they take it off like six jumps and that kind of thing. It's cool. And like, you know, I'm friends with people who are part of those teams, and, you know, where the University of Michigan team works, those teams are also located. You know, we'll share resources or whatever that might be. But there's no real adventure. Like, you know, the big FSAE is at the Michigan International Speedway. And so, you know, you trailer your car 40 minutes to drive around a track. Like, don't get me wrong, like there's a ton of talented people and, you know, it's a cool thing to do, but like, it's way freaking cooler to drive a solar car across the country and have this grand adventure and meet all these people and, you know, see the United States. And, you know, the same thing applies with Australia. So, you know, I think if you just want to learn about engineering, then those are cool. But like, if you want to have a like grand adventure, then I feel like, you know, solar car is the way to do it. And, you know, the fact that you don't know where you're going to stop, you don't know, you know, you could break down, you could end up in the middle of a field, you could break down in the middle of a downtown and just have to fix it there. Like, I don't know, I guess there's something like romantic about that maybe. And like, that's why, and even compared to doing a regular cannonball run, you know, for some engineers listening out there, like, you know, it's a pretty predictable thing. Like it's a great achievement to drive a car very fast across the country, but it's not necessarily like, you know, there's not as much as the fear of the unknown as you're relying on the sun, you've built this contraption, like, it's just a grand adventure.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it just sounds like the perfect practice or training for like working at an EV startup, right? Because you have all engineering, but the other piece of it is just handling the uncertainty and the stress of not knowing, you know, are we going to make our next funding round? Are we going to get this?
What I love about all these naysayers and idiots and cowards who say, oh, the cannonball run's just a bunch of criminals flooring it. The cannonball run legacy is the history of someone like you and your team using cutting edge tech to try to do something that's never been done before, better, just better. And you did it. So congratulations. If someone out there, one of our audience members, would like to contact you and your teammates, potentially with a job offer or funding for whatever you guys want to do next, how should they get in touch with you guys?
Sure. So I think our emails are on our website. Instagram. Oh yeah. So website is just www.thecannonballsun.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram. It's all at The Cannonball Sun. If you just Google like Cannonball Solar Car, I think we're now the first people to come up, which is cool. you can just reach out. There's contact information on the website. We'll respond to your Instagram DM. That's how we got on the podcast. Facebook messenger, whatever that is. I'd love to, talk to anyone. And we're, super passionate about this project and adventure.
Well, congratulations. And let me tell you, hearing this story, reading about you guys and listening to you talk makes me so enthusiastic and optimistic for the future. Well done.
And, thanks. Kind words. Yeah.
I'll text Ed Bolian. Are you already booked on the VinWiki?
No. Yeah, we want to get on VinWiki.
Let me text them. I'll text them after we're done here.
That's awesome.
And thank you. And thanks to everyone for joining us in this episode of the Atonicast.